Sane's the king, and he went up and stood in his chair. You don't stand in the king's chair.
Welcome back to another episode of the Cue It Up podcast. And for this week, I am regularly joined with the Mr. Regular, Mr. Robert Hovek. What's up, Rob?
Well, I'll tell you what, Nate. It's another day in the life. You know what I mean? I woke up today and I just said thanks. So that's the way it is when you're old.
Another healthy day, another success.
Yeah, and the bed was dry.
Got to celebrate the small victories, I guess, huh?
That's right.
Yikes. Yes, well, there we go. So, I guess, Rob, why don't we just start it off with, we will give a shout out to the Arizona Hall of Fame, which was started up by a bunch of people from Arizona. I don't know the exact board members. I know Mike Howerton is part of that. And Mike Howerton is obviously the other person who does, he's the founder of AZ Billiards, and Mike Howerton has the other billiards podcast called Pool Podcasts. So if you haven't made it over to that one yet and checked it out, he does an episode about once a month or so, but it's always good. His content's always great. And so we will give a plug to the Arizona Hall of Fame. You can head over to their website. So you can head over to their website at azbhof.com. And if you wanted to, get a membership to theirs and support local pool, because they are going to do, I'm assuming, very, very good things for the pool community in Arizona and abroad. So head over to there and check out their new website.
I did believe Wisconsin was the first state to do a Hall of Fame for local players. Now, is Arizona the second state to follow suit with that? Think that was a good idea?
As far as I know, they were. If you told me I was wrong, I would say okay, but I'm pretty sure that Arizona is the second state that has a state Hall of Fame for billiards. So,
you know, I was in Arizona this last winter now, visiting, playing in a billiard tournament in Tucson, but then I visited a friend down a little community south of there, and he said, come on over to the community center. They've got some tables, over 3 9-foot tables over there. And when we got there, it was 8:30 in the morning. And there were no tables available. And I said, I asked him, is this normal? And he goes, yeah. Pretty much these three tables are used steady all day. And you've got to put your name on the board over there and wait your turn. And there's an hour, kind of a grace hour. You know, you can play. If it was a little over that, that's fine. You know, you let it go. If you're going to play one pocket or whatever you're going to play, it's going to take a while. No straight pool games to 200. You know, if the place is crowded, if there's people, if there's nobody waiting, that's another story. But anyhow, the Arizona is very likely. I would think California would be, Texas would be, Colorado would be, you know, states that we're going to jump on this. Minnesota, probably. Michigan.
Oklahoma has a pretty strong pool scene as well. I don't know if you said Oklahoma.
But, no, I didn't. But, you know, I think we're in the south of Florida, too, for that matter. You get a lot of people my age now. Who, that's where they go half the year or more. That's where they are. And they're still playing pool. They played pool all their life, and now they're still playing. Except now they're playing in another state.
Yep. So I guess if your state isn't, if you in your state are interested in potentially starting up one of these, it's going to take a lot of people who are very, very focused and willing to put forth a lot of effort into something that isn't going to have really much financial outcomes that are beneficial to your pocketbook. But if you are willing to try to put one of these together, you could reach out to the podcast, me or Rob, and we could put you in touch with some people who would be able to help you with some ideas and some blueprints on how you could get it started. So I guess from there we can move on to all of the t-shirts that have been ordered in the last week, and all of the t-shirt winners have all been sent out. So if you have not gotten them yet, you can reach out to me and let me know, and I can check into them to see where they're at, and hopefully that they'll get there soon. If they haven't been received yet, unless you're from one of the Canadian people who ordered, or obviously the Sweden order. Those are going to take a little bit longer because they have to go through customs and all that stuff, but you should be getting those very soon if you have not gotten them already. So all the people who have won t-shirts for the 1,000 likes promotion, if you have not gotten yet, let me know. So then we can move on to Sneaky Pete Mafia is going to be doing a bit of a promotion thing where they are trying to get to 10,000 likes on their Facebook page. So if you have not heard of Sneaky Pete Mafia, I've talked about them a little bit on the podcast. They have a magazine that they have, and they do a bunch of really, really cool articles by pros and promoters and just fans and just really anybody. You can even, if you have something that you really like and want to write an article about it, you can even write an article and submit it to them. They don't guarantee that will ever see a magazine, but they do read everyone that they get. So if you were ever interested in writing an article for them, you could certainly do that. You could also head over to the website at sneakypetemafia.com and read all of the magazines and check out their website if you wanted to. But basically, if you haven't gone over to their Facebook page yet and gave it a like, you should probably do that because he is trying to get up to 10,000 likes. And we support pool players who support the game. So let's show him a solid and try to get over there and like his page for him. Other than that, we can go into our two shout-outs for the week. Do you have your shout-out ready, Rob?
Okay, this is an obscure shout-out. But there'll be a reason for it. So he's just an old friend. This, to give an example, this person, the kind of person he is, he's a self-made building contractor almost all his life, and a good one. And he has been interested in pool all of his life as a spectator and as a player, as probably an A player. And he has just recently told me that he kind of wants to liquidate his assets. And part of his assets are around 100 pool tables late. So I'm going to shout out to Greg Utero from Superior, Wisconsin, for his offering of these slates at rock bottom price for people who want to build a pool table or use the slates for whatever they want to. So thanks, Greg.
Awesome. And my shout out this week is going to be of the melancholy type. I will shout out to Helena Thornfelt. Obviously, if you haven't heard this yet, she passed away this week, and she was not very old. She was only 52. And
I did not know that. No.
Yeah. She passed away this week at age 52. And, she was obviously a monster in the pool scene for a long time. Her nickname was the Sledgehammer because she hit the balls insanely hard. She was an insanely good breaker and an insanely good player. She was inducted into the WPA Hall of Fame in 2017. So she was definitely a very, very, very good player. And it's a sad week for pool that we lost her. So my shout out will be a melancholy goodbye to Helena Thornfelt. And I guess with that, we can jump into the rest of the podcast. Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame. Hall of Fame weekend is fast approaching. Join us on October 11th through the 13th in Beloit, Wisconsin. Jeffrey Carter, David Jacoby, Randy Lamar, and Frank Stellman will be inducted on Friday evening at La Casa Grande. Registration for the banquet can be found on wibhof.org. The Saturday and Sunday tournaments are half full already, so please don't wait to get your registration in for them and miss out. See you all in October at Cole's Karen Room. So there were only two events basically in Wisconsin this week that are going to be worth talking about. There was a 564 and below 8-ball at Sussex Bowl, which had Ron Leschig getting first place, who was a 561, so 1 point under. Scott Henry gets second place. Gary Pinola gets third place. And Robert Johnson gets fourth place. Pretty good field, too. They had about 32 players. So, and then the other event we'll talk about was the Billy Bass tournament at the Ballroom in Portage, and yours truly decided that he was going to play well for a day, and I completed the double dip over Sean Henning to win this event. Obviously, then Sean Henning gets second place. Third place goes to Dan Schneider. Fourth place goes to Ken Shaw. Fifth place goes to Bill Larson and Dan Mosier. And seventh place goes to Duncan Kaufman and Chad Lund. And obviously, I was there because I was lucky enough to win it. But it was a pretty smoothly run event, and it was a good time had by all.
How much luck did you have to win it?
I had a lot.
You just said you were lucky enough, so you must have got lucky.
I did. I had a lot of hill matches. The first set I had actually against Ken Shaw, I was lucky enough to have him basically make one mistake. We both had two table runs in a race to three going into the fourth game with him breaking, and he breaks and makes a ball and has a chance to run out, and I was fortunate enough for him to make a mistake and miss a ball, and then I was able to run out from there. So I didn't miss a ball in the first set, and then I had to play Duncan Kaufman in the third set, who is always a formidable opponent, and again, he made a mistake on the hill that allowed me to sneak away with the win in that one.
So was it a missed ball, or did he hook himself?
Yeah, it was a mispositioning on the hill. Yeah, and then I got knocked to the one loss side by Bill Larson, who had a great event. Bill played very, very well in that. And went to the one loss side and had to play Greg Fix first round. And I was lucky enough to break well against him, and he didn't break very well, so I was able to beat him. But then the next four matches all went hill-hill, so anytime you have a hill-hill, I was lucky enough to be 6-0 in hill-hill matches. So
yeah, racing the one.
Yeah.
How many of those did you break in out of those six?
On the hill?
Yeah.
Ooh, I know I broke and ran on the hill against Chad Lund, and then I broke and ran on the hill, I think, against Dan Schneider. So at least those two, and I did not have it against Dan Mosier. He had to make a mistake for me to be lucky enough to get back to the table there. And I did have it against Ken Shaw. So I was lucky. I guess I won a lot of coin flips, which is pretty necessary if you're gonna get on the hill and win. So
a race to three.
Yeah. Race to three, and I was 6-0 in hill matches. That's not gonna happen very often. So I guess that's what it takes to win a tournament though, right?
That is what it takes. That when necessary you play as good as you can play. And you get a break here and there. That's the only thing that separates, two good players on the table. Which one takes advantage of an opportunity?
Absolutely.
So way to go, Nate. I'm real proud of you. That race to three is that's a tough one.
Thanks, Rob. It is. Yeah, I was lucky enough to win the Friday night warm-up, too. But that only had about 15 players in it. But I've been playing good. I'll give a shout-out to TSBN this week. I've actually been playing a lot of their matches this week. And
So you got some other players to join over there, huh?
Yeah, I got a couple that I'm working with that we're trying it out and seeing how it goes. And I played about 9 matches this week, actually, between Wednesday and Thursday. So I actually got about...
Oh, no wonder you were playing. you played a lot in a couple days before you played in the tournament.
Yeah, between Wednesday and Thursday, I probably had about 14 hours on the table. And then, of course, being unemployed helps this because I don't have anything going on during the day. And then Friday, I had about another 6 or 7 hours on the table. So I was pretty in
strong. Your
pool
game always gets better when you don't have a job.
Yeah, right.
It does. And then when you get married, it drops off the face of the planet until your kids are all grown up, and then it comes back.
Well, no kids for us, so I think we're going to be okay in that one. Yeah, so, I'll give a shout-out to TSBN here, and I will say that I've been playing a lot, and the matches are pretty fun. Okay. I still haven't got to the point where I'm ready to completely give my endorsement to it, but the matches are fun, and they motivated me to play, which is exactly what I was hoping it to do. I probably haven't played 20 hours of pool going into a pool tournament in years. So I'm motivated to play. They make the matches fun. And I guess I'm looking forward to continuing playing because this league actually makes me want to play. So
nice.
Yeah. I guess with that, we can move on to the upcoming events. With Wisconsin's upcoming events will be brought to you by Jeff Glaza and CBD for Life Global. Several years ago, Jeff challenged himself to be the best pool player he could be. He quickly learned three things. It was going to take a lot more work than he thought, the game was mostly mental, and that he did not play well enough in pain and or being in an unhealthy state of mind. For over 20 years, Jeff has been interested in a more natural approach to health. One day, a couple years ago, while doing research, he discovered CBD as a natural way to reduce the effects of anxiety. After taking CBD regularly, he began to experience life-changing results not only with less anxiety, but also less muscle and joint pain, and the bonus of a more restful sleep. CBD is now a major part of his life and goals of being as healthy as possible and continuing to enjoy and excel at the game. Jeff would like to invite you to share in the amazing benefits of CBD and find out how it could benefit your life and game as well. He invites you to text him anytime at 715-887-2550 or follow the link on my website and you will find over 70 high-quality products delivered to your door that all come with an empty bottle, 60-day money-back guarantee. So there are a couple events coming up this week. There is a 1,000 and below two-person scotch tournament, and this is at Vibes in Sheboygan. $60 per team with green fees included, so race to four on the winners and losers. So that's an event. And there's also a 2 8-ball tournaments 1 day event, which has a 525 and a 600 and under at the ballroom. So there are two different tournaments you can play in there. And then there is also a singles 8-ball event at the Top Hat Tavern in Superior, Wisconsin, up in your neck of the woods, Rob. So I guess those are all the events coming up. All right, so let's move on to the pros. So the big event this week, obviously, was the Turning Stone Classic, and we can jump into that. But before we do that, let's talk about the after Shane Van Boning and Jason Shaw played up last week. There was also another match that happened between Jason Shaw and Sky Woodward, which was a $10,000 in the middle, $5,000 ahead, race to 30, which had Jason Shaw winning 30-27. So Jason Shaw won a little bit back of the money that he lost to Shane, and unfortunately, yeah, Sky came out on the wrong end of that one.
Well, three games. Not much.
Nope.
It's like almost nothing.
Yep. And because that was so long ago, and I don't remember basically yesterday, we won't talk much about that match. But yeah, that just know that that happened. And then the other big event that happened this week, and I will, for full disclosure, say that I barely watched any of this. I know that there was one big controversy that happened between Johnny Archer and Shane Van Boning, which Rob and I will talk a little bit about, but because I was playing in the tournament this weekend and Friday night, I really didn't have a lot of time to watch much of this. So we won't talk too much about it, but looking at the results, Shane Van Boning wins 13-11 over Earl Strickland, who won the hill. So sighting of Earl the Pearl Strickland, which is kind of cool. We're seeing him playing pretty good pool, and you know, he beat some pretty good players to get there. He beat Shane Van Boning 9-5 in the quarters, and then he beat Thorsten Holman 9-8 in the semis, and then he beat Jason Shaw 9-1 in for the chair, which is a pretty good win.
Wow.
So that's a pretty good tournament for Earl, but like I said, Shane wins 13-11 over Earl the Pearl in the finals, which was a single race duel 13, it looks like. Jason Shaw gets third place. Billy Thorpe gets fourth place. Thorsten Holman and Brandon Schuff get fifth, sixth place. So that looked to be a pretty good event that had some pretty decent players in it. And with that, we can talk about the tiny little, well, I shouldn't say tiny controversy because it kind of took the social media by storm, but Johnny Archer basically got a foul called on him by Shane Van Boning in the match that they played. And after that happened, Johnny Archer forfeited the match and Shane moved on from there. At this point, everybody's pretty much seen either video or, you know, the before and after. I saw a before and after blown up picture that, it really showed, I guess, that the ball did move. It was not very much, but it did move with a tiny, tiny, tiniest of bits. And they were playing all ball fouls, so that is a foul. And I guess, Rob, what is your opinion on that?
Yeah, foul is a foul. Pretty simple.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat. I mean, I would like to say that it's kind of nitty and, you know, petty that he would call that on it. He was up 6-4 in the match at the time.
Did he call it on himself?
No.
Right.
No, Johnny Archer, I think, said that it didn't happen, and that's why he forfeited the match.
See, that's always a tough one. That's when as a player, you don't know, really don't know that you just fall.
Yeah, and it didn't move much.
Right,
I don't know. I mean, you never really truly know because every single player in history basically says, you know, that never happened. There's honorable pool players out there that don't do that, but for the most part, everybody says, you know, I never did that. That's not true. And, you know, there could be video evidence that shows that it's true, and they'll still deny it to, you know.
It's a rarity that you fall and don't know that you just fouled.
Yes,
I don't know that you just touched a ball. I had one this weekend that my shirt, I didn't tuck the flannel shirt on. When I leaned over the table, my shirt was, a little bit of it was laying on the rail, and one of the balls came around, hit the rail, and went off my shirt. So that would be a fall.
Yeah.
So if I didn't make the billiard because of that, but if I would have made it because of that, that wouldn't have counted.
So I guess there's not really much to talk about. We're pretty much in agreement there. It sucks that it happened, but at the same time, all ball fouls mean all ball fouls. And you could always, you know, fix this in the future by having refs at every table, but there's not a ton of money in pool as is, so it's kind of hard to pay a bunch of refs for, you know, basically being at every table. That's a lot of time that you're paying refs, you know, a couple $100 a day, or at least maybe like $100 a day, but covering their hotels and their meals and stuff. So there's just not enough money in pool to be able to do that right now. Hopefully in the future, maybe, but.
Well, I've seen players walk away from the table in the middle of a rack and sit down, and nobody knows why. And they get asked, well, what's going on? And they just say, I just touched the ball, and nobody saw it. There's no evidence of it. Just the player that did. I saw Ty Wilson do that one time. I've done it. You know, there's players out there that do that kind of thing. I've seen Jeremy Fedkenhauer do it. Just nick a ball. Nobody else saw it. You know, you wonder what's going on. Why is the guy sitting down? Well, there you go. He's calling a foul on himself.
Yeah. So I guess with that, we can move on to the upcoming pros. So there's one big event that's going on, and this is actually the Boot Hill Billiard Bonanza, which is kind of TSBN's, I guess, national event, their first national event. And it is being held in Dodge City, Kansas, and I am actually going to this. I am jumping on a flight on Tuesday morning and heading down to this event. So I'll be there basically for almost a week. And I'm going to do some marketing for the podcast. And I've been telling myself for about a million years now that I need to go to one of these and do some marketing for myself and make some connections with some of the pros and some of the top promoters. So I'm going to finally do it, and I'm going to head down there. And
well, thank God for unemployment.
Yes, exactly, right? And I'm not going back to school yet.
Yeah, when you're working, you wouldn't be able to do that.
Exactly. And I'll be back one day before I start school. How fun is that? So yeah, so there is a pro event out there, and there are a bunch of top pros that are signed up, and I'm actually really excited to get to watch a lot of them play.
And what's the name of that event again? TSPN?
Yeah, it's the Boot Hill Billiard Bonanza, and yeah, it's I'm really looking forward to it. There is a bunch of amateur events going on out there, and there's a bunch of team events, and there's some pro events, so I am going to be out there. If anybody else is going to be out there and would like to meet up and have a drink at some point in time and just chat about the podcast or about life or anything else or how much you hate my co-host, go ahead, reach out to me, and we'll meet up and have a drink. I personally love nothing more than ripping on Rob. So
Nate will pass all those tidbits on to me, and then I can relish in the hate.
That you will. You thrive on it. You perform better under that pressure. Oh, yeah. So that's the only event coming up. So let's move on to our discussion topic that we didn't do last week and to Rob's Random Tidbits.
Random Tidbits.
We'll start with our discussion topic, which we decided last week that we weren't going to do because we just didn't have enough time. We didn't think we had enough time. But this podcast is a little bit shorter. So we are going to talk about kind of two topics, but they're very intertwined, which is electronics and pool, whether it's your phone or headphones or both. And whether or not we think it's okay that you should be able to use these while playing in a pool match or a pool tournament or a pool league or anything like that. So, Rob, why don't you start it out with your opinions on people using their electronics during a pool match?
Now, I think electronics are great if you're alone and you're practicing or you're in a place like a pool hall with a lot of noise and you don't want the noise or distractions while you're learning or even maybe taking a lesson. But in a match, in a tournament, you have to be aware of your opponent. If you got headphones on or anything like that, you're not aware of him. He could say something while he's at the table, like, okay, now there's no doubt here I'm playing the four ball, and you just don't hear it because you're distracted. It's like driving a car. If you're on your phone, you're on your phone while you're playing a pool match, you're distracted. It's not a form of respect for your opponent when you're distracted and playing a match. So I'm not for anybody using any type of electronic piece of equipment while they're in a match, whether it be the shooter or the opponent sitting in a chair, the shooter wearing any type of gear on their head, that certainly as an opponent, I don't like that because if I have something to say, he can't hear me. I have to jump up, go get in his line of sight, wave my hands back and forth like, hey, you know, I got something to say to you here, and you're using these headphones as a way for you to block out the environment around you. So, no, I think it's a bad idea.
And, Rob, you are notorious for trying to talk to your opponents when you play.
I have been known to do that, yes, that I enjoy that part of the interaction of the game, whether it be in a tournament or not, that there's no reason why you shouldn't be able to do that.
Yeah.
As long as you're not doing it to distract your opponent. You could be talking about a shot he made or a shot, you know, that happened or something else, the weather or whatever it is you want to talk about. I do not like playing pool and totally sitting there in silence. You don't have to do that in three cushion billiards. You acknowledge your opponent in billiards by tapping the chalk against your cue, by snapping your hear that?
Yep. That's yeah. My that's
somebody
that's
makes
what I
a
do.
Good shot. Somebody makes a good shot and you hear a bunch of that kind of stuff. And so there's interaction. And I don't like playing without any interaction at all.
Yeah.
So that's just me.
Yeah. So this is a much, much less black and white issue for me. Obviously, so there was a situation this weekend that happened, and anybody who was at the ballroom knows exactly what I'm talking about. But there was quite the uproar that happened at one point in time between a couple of the patrons of the bar. And I will not go into details on that, but the person who did it knows who they are, and I would hope that they don't feel exactly proud about what happened. But I will not go into details on that, but I was playing in a match, and I was actually up 2-0 at that time that all of this went down. And this happened for about 10 to 15 minutes where these two people were basically just screaming at each other and running around the bars acting like hooligans. And I went over to my pool case, and I grabbed my headphones, and I threw them in, and I basically started listening to some awesome Meatloaf, and I was completely just zoning out everything that was happening. It took me a little while to get settled down and back into a zone because I actually ended up winning that match on the hill, one of my six. But I felt like I actually needed that to keep myself centered, keeping myself in the zone to be able to play well. Obviously, there are situations where they're more correct than others. I don't think that we should be seeing the Moscone Cup where Shane Van Boning is wearing, you know, earbuds and listening to music. But at the same time, I guess I should say this. Anything with the pros, anything that's televised, the phone should be nowhere in sight. You should not see earbuds. You should not see a phone. The pros should be held to a different standard than the amateurs. in the same way every single sport is like. But I actually, I mean, when you're at the table and there is a shot that you think might need a ref for it, just be aware of your opponent. You know, if they want to call over a ref, you know, kind of look out of the corner of your eye, make sure that they're not doing anything. And when you're not at the table, have an earbud out in case, you know, your opponent wants to talk to you. And, you know, they're not screaming up and down like, you know, Rob, like you were saying earlier, just to get your opponent's attention. If you're going to use them, be completely conscious and respectful with your using them. I personally am very in favor of using them. I really like using them for occasions. And I did use them from there on out the rest of the tournament. And, you know, it helps block out some of the stuff. So I guess I'm pretty open to having them. And it might just be the difference in age between the two of us and the generation gap. But I am perfectly okay with it as long as you are still being respectful to your opponent.
I'm trying to picture other sports where they would do this. Do basketball players wear any kind of headgear, or tennis players, do they?
But during warm-ups, they do. A lot of the pros in the NFL, NBA, they all wear, like, usually Beats or Bose. Kind of depends on who they're sponsored by. But, like, Carson Wentz, he wears Bose before every game. LeBron James wears Beats before every game. And that's kind of, it's almost like a trademark marketing thing where, like, you know they're going to have them on there, and that's part of their persona.
I see. Yeah, so you could do the podcast kind of thing.
Well, I do use Bose.
While you're playing.
I do wear Bose for the podcast. So, you know, maybe I could reach out to Bose and they can start paying me to do the podcast in their headphones.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, well, who knows? I'm sure they've sponsored stupider things than a pool podcast.
Yeah, I just think that, you know, when you, I've played in some local, they're just small tournaments. It's no big deal. A weekend kind of thing, you know, in your local tavern down the street, that kind of stuff. And routinely, and it's always the same guys, and it is a generational thing. I don't see too many times. Of course, nowadays, almost everybody has their personal intelligence machine that they're hooked on and hooked to and hooked up with, you know, talking on their phone, doing stuff on their phone, Facebooking, whatever, while you're at the table shooting. And I don't care for that too much.
Yeah.
Just a personal thing.
Yep. Yep, I get it. So I guess we can wrap that up there. And Rob, do you have any random tidbits for us?
The random tidbits. Oh, this is the stuff I like. This is the stuff I like. Yes. Yes, I do.
I'm liking it more and more every week.
Do you know that I changed my name on Facebook. It's No One. N-O-O-N-E, No One. So now when I see any stupid posts, I can click on it, and it'll say, No One Likes This.
Appropriate. That would be a very valuable tool for a lot of posts I see on Facebook.
Oh, yeah.
Especially around political time.
Oh, absolutely. And if con is the opposite of pro, does that mean Congress is the opposite of progress?
Fair. Mitch McConnell kind of makes it that way, doesn't he?
Yeah. And then how about this one? I am a nobody, and nobody's perfect. Therefore, I'm perfect.
All right. Yeah, I had to follow that logic, but yeah, that's...
Yeah, you think about that.
Yeah, ask your wife to verify that, but...
Yeah, right, yeah. And here's one I kind of like that. You should never argue with a fool because they'll just lower you to their level and then they beat you with all of their experience.
That is a Mark Twain quote, and that is one of my favorite quotes from Mark Twain. Never argue with an idiot. They'll drag you down to their level and beat you with experience.
Yeah. Yeah. My wife called me the other day. Well, it was last winter. And she says, honey, the windows are frozen. And I just told her, pour some warm water over them. And she goes, you know what? I tried that, and it completely screwed up the computer.
Your wife is too good for you.
I asked her. No, my wife was complaining the other day. She said, honey, you never take me anywhere expensive anymore. So I said, come on, get in the car. Let's go get some gas.
Actually, the gas is starting to be lowered again.
It is.
Which is nice.
Yeah. My clever friend said to me the other day, you know, onions are the only food that can make me cry. So I grabbed a coconut and threw it at its face.
All right. Well, that was definitely random and tidbits.
Why can't a bike stand up by itself? Because it's too tired.
I see what you did there.
How does NASA organize their company parties?
I don't know.
They plan it. Planet? Get it? Planet?
Oh, planet.
Hey, think about this one. Think about this. This one's good, and I'll end with this one. One day a tiger was walking through the jungle, and he saw two men relaxing under a tree. One was reading a newspaper. The other was working feverishly on a manual typewriter. The tiger leaped on the man with the newspaper and ate him. The tiger didn't bother the other man at all. That's because any predator knows that readers digest, but writers cram.
I see what you did there.
There it is.
I see what you did there. All right, well.
That's all she wrote.
So I guess we can now close out the podcast with our two tips. And I will go first this week. And my tip for the week is going to be to always practice with a purpose. And what I mean by that is it doesn't do you any good to actually just go to your local pool hall and hit balls around. As far as like fundamentally, it's not going to really improve your tournament or gambling game. At least this is what I found. It doesn't prepare you for what you actually need to do. So what I would advise to do is always come up with competitions that you can do with yourself if you play by yourself. So if you don't have a practice partner, a regular practice partner that you can play with, and even if you do, always come up with little competitions. It doesn't have to be for money. It doesn't have to be for, you know, drinks. It could just be for fun. But the idea is you always got to be working towards something. So that something can be a lot of different things, and you got to find out what it's going to be. But don't just go to a pool hall and hit balls around with your buddy or by yourself. Always do something with a purpose, even if it's like playing the ghost. That's what I generally do when I'm playing by myself, is I play against the ghost. And I challenge myself by doing each time I play against it, I'm trying to work on specific things. I might set up for more banks than I normally would, or I might set up for some easier kick shots, or I'll set up for jump shots. Each time that you play a match, work on something fundamentally, whether it's your banking, your kicking, your jumping, your break shots, whatever it is. Always practice with a purpose and with a singular goal in mind. If you just go into a practice session hitting balls, you're not going to get anything out of it. So practice with a purpose. Rob, what do you have?
Yeah, I'll just add to that. Make it a small expectation so that it's easier to achieve it. You think of a purpose that you need to do or one specific thing that you want to work on. That practice session, if you're not going to be playing a match against somebody, and do it. If it's draw shots, if it's spin shots, if it's touch, if it's long strokes, short strokes, punch stroke, whatever it is you're going to work on. Yeah, I like that tidbit there, that tip from you, Nate. That's a good one. Practice with a purpose, a specific purpose.
Yeah, and I will say, expanding off what you just said too, I will play games. Sometimes it's not necessarily against a ghost if I'm just having, you know, if I don't have a lot of time or something. And I will hit entire racks where I draw every single ball, or I use left spin on every single ball, or I use right spin on every single ball. Even if it's a stop shot, you can hit a stop shot as a, you know, with a ton of right hand spin.
Sure.
So, you know, I'll just work on, you know, controlling that deflection and playing positioning using whatever side of the cue ball or whatever area of the cue ball I want to use that time. So that's another thing that you can do to work on your Englishes.
Right, for sure. Yeah, my tip, you know, I see tons of players, they have, say, an open rack or a rack where you're first at the table after your opponent misses or they run a few balls. But whatever the situation is, you have some. Your object, of course, is to make all the balls on the table, and you, your small or large balls, if you're playing eight ball, and of course, rotation the next number of ball. And that means that there's a certain number there. It could be five, six, seven. It could be nine, if it's the whole table of nine, or 10 in 10 ball. But what I've seen players who are learning do, it's one of two things. It's not look ahead to the right amount of shots ahead, and there's a number for that. Because planning a whole rack when you're a B player is almost impossible, even an A player. Ball for ball for ball, this is the first one I'm going to accept in rotation. But even in rotation, it's really tough on the two ball to be looking at the seven ball, thinking about what you're going to do for that ball. So my suggestion and my tip is the only thing you need to do is look two balls ahead of the ball you're shooting. You don't have to look way down the rack, but you really need to look further than the next ball. You need to look at the ball after that also.
And I will jump in and say that that is especially true for 9-ball and 10-ball, any rotation games. You don't need to look the entire rack ahead. In fact, most of the time, it's not even advantageous to do that. Two balls ahead is usually plenty when playing rotation games. You need to look ahead.
But that's a minimum,
yes,
two balls.
Yes.
You need not to, one, two.
Yes. Yes, minimum two. You need to look ahead in 9-ball and 10-ball to see any potential trouble areas that need to be cleared up. For example, if you have the 3-ball hanging in the jaws and you have a 2-ball that you can really manufacture, you can work with to, you know, do something with it, and you see down table that you have the 7 and the 8-ball that are tied up, you can use that 2-ball to try to break out that 7 and the 8 because you have a 3-ball hanging in the jaws. You can make it from anywhere. You can look ahead to stuff like that, and you can know all that stuff just by the balls resting after the break shot. But I agree with that entirely, especially for rotation, looking 2 to 3 balls ahead only. 8-ball, I don't necessarily agree with that one, just because I play patterns a little bit differently than you do, I think, in 8-ball. And there's a little bit more subjectivity in 8-ball patterns. But for rotation, you get my full endorsement.
Yes, yes, there is. 8-ball changes because of the availability of the balls. And if there's a ball somewhere that is going to be a little tougher to get to, where in of course, 9-ball and 10-ball, as you get to the end of the rack, there's no balls on the table. You only got to get to one or two balls. There's, you know, if it's a break and run type situation in 8-ball, there's balls all over the place yet. Your opponent's balls all over there. So a lot of times it'll be, you know, the way you're going to be thinking about it, you still need to think more than one ball ahead. Absolutely. That way you can't just think, you have to think at minimum two, even in 8-ball.
And I will expand a little bit more on that too, where when I play rotation, I actually like to look 3 balls ahead first and find out how I make that ball. And then
get the wrong side of balls.
Yes. And then where do I need to get to on the ball before that? So 2 balls ahead to get me to where I need to be on that one. And then I look 1 ball ahead where I need to be to get myself onto the 2-ball to where I need to get myself onto the 3-ball. And then I look with what I have and see if that's feasible. If that's feasible, then I do it. If it's not feasible, then I need to really start getting inventive and creative at that point in time on how to make all of this happen. And that's going to come with experience. So that's nothing that we can teach you over a podcast. That's just, you know, either taking professional lessons and being shown it and absorbing it, or whether it's just, you know, putting the grind in and, you know, learning all these things as you go.
I believe that is part of the process. I think that the time spent, the amount of racks you've seen, the amount of racks you've played and messed up, that's really important. If you have any memory at all and you know why you messed up and you know why you didn't run that rack, you know why you lost that match, that's where you have to focus in the future on that.
Yep, I agree. So I guess with that, we can wrap this up for another week.
Sounds good.
All right. Rob, I will thank you again for joining me, and until next week.
And congratulations again, Nate.
Thanks, man.
63 players, you were number one.
Yep, it felt pretty good. It's been a while since I've had a singles victory like this. I've had a lot of team wins, but...
The cash you walked away with, $520 plus 50.
Yeah, $570 for first place with a $50 bet that I had won.
And was there a reason you didn't buy half yourself in the Calcutta?
Well, I went for $300 in the Calcutta, and I had decided that going into that tournament that because I'm unemployed, I don't know, it's a race to three, it's really hard to predict anything, and I decided going into it that I was going to put a certain amount of money on a limit that I was willing to spend to play in the event. So if I'd have gotten my half, I would have had you know, basically $200 invested into the day before I even hit a ball. And, you know, money is going to be a little tight because obviously I'm going back to school and I might be going back to school for a full year. So I can't go probably just blowing through a bunch of money to take shots at larger amounts of money. So especially in a race to three type of format. So I decided that I was not going to get my half. And the first prize for the Calcutta, unfortunately, was $1,880. So I missed out on that. But, you know, that's okay. I was there to win the tournament, and I was lucky enough to be able to do that. So can't squander over things lost. Just got to take what you got and be happy with it. And I am.
Me too.
Thanks, buddy. So I guess let's wrap this up. Till we meet again.
Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. If you like what you've heard and you listen through iTunes, please subscribe and leave a rating. It helps others find the podcast. As always, thank you to our sponsors, Jacoby Custom Cues, Cody's Cue Therapy, Jeff Glaz's CBD for Life Global, the Wisconsin Billiards Hall of Fame, The Rocks Sports Bar and Grill, the IQ Practice Cue Ball, and the Wisconsin Pool Player Society. If you like what you hear, consider supporting the people who support the podcast. I would also like to take this time to thank Matt Kitzman, Robert Miller, Natasha, Kurt Elliott, Scott Doolian, Corey Smith, William Sutherland, and Mike Teasy for their help to market the podcast to a larger audience. Lastly, I would like to thank my cousin Andrew Mindham for his band Hey Captain Knight's music as segment and filler music to the podcast. If you like what you hear, you can find all of his music at heycaptainknight.bandcamp.com. And Knight is K-N-I-G-H-T.